Good morning. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. It's the 23rd day of March 2020. I'm David Ellis with you up until 2 o'clock today. And as usual, you can share your concerns with us via 434-1790. You can also communicate with us via our WhatsApp chat. And naturally, there's a lot of concern at the moment about the fact that we are now into stage two of our response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Many people are today working from home. Large gatherings are being discouraged. But I would also caution you that you shouldn't just go by the numbers which have been given by government, which is 25, no more than 25 people in public. But many people are, you know, getting together in their own homes. Even there, you have to be exceedingly careful. And if you look at what has happened in other countries around the world, they began by allowing larger numbers, but because of the spread, they had to reduce those numbers considerably. One country of note is Germany, which says that no more than two people should be in public. For them, a group is two. So, you know, this is a situation here that is quite fluid. And I think that ultimately, the government can only do so much. Each and every one of us has to be responsible for ourselves. This is Down to Brass Tacks. I think the first person I have on the line today is Shelley Weir. Good morning, Shelley. If you are there, hello.
Hello.
Well, it's not Shelley. Please see if we can get Shelley Weir on the line because she has a particular concern. You are familiar with the fact that Ms. Weir has been associated with one of the bodies here in Barbados that is looking at people with health issues. And there is a particular drug which she tells me is heavily used by people with her particular ailment, but now that drug is being used, or it is recommended in the United States that it be used for dealing with the issue of COVID-19. And in those circumstances, it seems as though we are already starting to have concerns about a possible shortage. So let's see what we hear from her. If we can't, then we'll go to another caller and then we come back to her, okay? But ideally, I wanted to start the program with Shelley Weir's concern this morning. Down to Brass Tacks, hello?
Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, good morning, David.
Yes, good morning, Shelley.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, tell us what your concern is.
All right, from, let's say about last week, in the daily briefings from the White House, they started to talk a lot about hydroxychloroquine in terms of the treatment for coronavirus. And it got the rheumatologists excited because this is the same drug that is a life-saving drug for lupus. Now, the brand name would be Plaquenil, but the same hydroxychloroquine. The message might have been blurred in and out because President Trump has been talking about it in terms of a cure for coronavirus or a path towards the vaccination. But the reality of it is that it is being used in the treatment of coronavirus for persons who are hospitalized. So we have reached the stage now where people are actually getting it for prophylactic purposes, meaning that they think if they take the drug, they wouldn't get coronavirus. My difficulty is, Barbados is so way down the food chain that it could create shortages for us.
And for us specifically, who?
Lupus patients, right, whose life depend on Plaquenil.
So what would be your recommendation in these circumstances? What's the best that we can do?
Well, as we start looking at what drugs we should have, I would want to say, remember, it is a life-saving drug for lupus patients. And that we do not have indiscriminate prescribing of the drug for those persons who think it might save them from COVID-19.
Well, this is...
So my call really to the ministry and the bars that be is to take note of how, if there has been any changes in the prescribing practices, say, over the last week, and ensure that our lives are not sacrificed. So if I were to make it personal, David, this year is going to be 30 years I've been living with lupus.
3-0.
3-0.
Yeah.
And I'm doing well. But if the focus is only on coronavirus, and the main purpose is to ensure we get good outcomes, we have no deaths from it, and I die from lupus because I couldn't get my medication, the only thought would be what she did well for 30 years.
That is a matter which the health authorities would need to address, and I hope that they have heard your concern, and that in at least one of their updates, if not before that, because this is a forum for them also to use to get their information out and to respond to matters such as the one that you have just raised. So we can only wait. And
for example, this morning, one of the talk show hosts on MSNBC said they had a friend with lupus who now cannot get the drug as usual, because there's a shortage, as we speak in the U.S., of Plaquenil, of the hydroxychloroquine. It has happened a lot faster than I thought it would in terms of shortage. So I really want to know where we are at in terms of our supply of hydroxychloroquine for the treatment of lupus patients, and I want to be assured that we are not put on the back burner as this pandemic begin to take, well, continue to take over everything.
You haven't heard any conflicting views on this question of hydroxychloroquine, though?
There are, I don't know as so much to say conflicting views, as much as I'm trying to unlayer the debate that is going around it. The doctor who is leading the whole corona fight on the U.S. side, he is hesitant to say that it is a treatment for coronavirus, and I understand that, because it was not made for coronavirus. By the same token, it was not made for lupus either. It is an anti-malarial drug.
Yes.
And some bright spark somewhere down the road some time ago thought, but this drug is working better for lupus than prednisolone, which is what we used to take. So it then had this cross purpose, and it is widely used now in the treatment of lupus. So until they get more than anecdotal data, I could understand that they would be hesitant to say, okay, this is the treatment of coronavirus. But from all reports, most reports coming out, it seems to be working and producing pretty good outcomes for persons who have been affected by it.
No, the point is that this is one of the drugs that has been anecdotally promoted, but the experts are saying that it is not a viable treatment. Nevertheless, once the President of the United States gets in public and says it, then a lot of people are going to say he must be talking the truth. So as a consequence of that, we are seeing this kind of reaction. And it, as you pointed out, it has serious implications to people like yourself.
And what I'm not clear on either is, since we have cases now, what is the protocol? Because what has come out of the U.S. in terms of the protocol for using hydroxychloroquine is a 5-day regime. And this is what they've been using, they say, for persons who are hospitalized. but I would like to hear what we are doing locally.
It's a tough one, because I see a piece here from ProRepublica, which says that Trump's unproven claim that hydroxychloroquine could be used to treat COVID-19 has led to hoarding, putting lupus patients and others at even greater risk. So it's not just lupus patients.
Yeah, those with rheumatoid arthritis as well, I think would be on hydroxychloroquine. But it is the life-saving drug for lupus.
Okay. Thank you very much for drawing this to national attention. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning, David.
Yes, morning.
First thing, I would advise people, anything that Donald Trump says, check it and check it and check it and check it. He is known. Right? And the other thing I would like to know, this virus, is it man-made or is it a natural something?
As far as I'm aware, from all that I've heard, it is a virus that jumped from animals to human beings.
That's like that.
That's my understanding. Yeah. But you will always get your conspiracy theorists who will tell you it's man-made by one country or the other as part of germ warfare. So I don't know about that. That's
another,
not what I've heard.
Another area that this thing can easily spread. I'm not saying that it was not mentioned, but I have not heard it. The handling of money, right, is another serious way in which it can be spread. I think what people should concentrate on is trying to build up the immune system as much as possible. I think so. I'm a doctor, but building up your immune system will probably give it the best.
I think you better listen to the doctors. Eating well is part of it, but it does not. It does not allow for people to indulge in unsafe and unhealthy practices. I think that's the fundamental message that we are getting. And a lot of Barbadians didn't get it up until this weekend, is that among the things you have to do is what is called social distancing, that you need to stay away from other people, stay away from crowds, keep your distance from other people when you're talking, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, but in the meantime, what are you going to use? And let's say I have it.
In the meantime, follow the rules and stop trying to make up rules along the way. The rule is that if you have it, you will call the necessary hotline, 536-4500, you will tell them that you are uneasy about what is happening to you, and you will take your guidance from them. You're not supposed to get involved in this approach of trying to self-prescribe. That's dangerous.
You know something? Those elderly people that we praise, and deservingly so, those people called centurions, that lived for so many, many years.
They never went through COVID-19.
I know. I had other things at that time, though. I personally feel that there's something that the Father put here.
Now go and look for it. All you got to do is go and look for it.
I know you're going to try to pull it down, right?
No. I'm trying to stop you from being irresponsible. That's what it is.
Well, you can call it what you like.
Let's move on, then. I'll call it what I like. Down to Brass Tacks.
Good morning, David.
Morning.
It's Glenn.
Yes, Glenn.
Well, yeah. That's a classic example of what we have to endure now in Barbados, that kind of thinking. I think the situation is such, given its unprecedented nature, that we have to be prepared to be as disciplined and as focused and as restrained as possible. And follow, like you said, the doctors, the medicine, the science, the instructions, those who are guiding the program. And not making up as you go along and falling for every rumor and bit of gossip and information that's passed around. That only undo all the good that is being done. And we are still early days yet. We are now in phase two. And the society has to be prepared to settle down be rational, be reasonable. Use the education that we spent so many billions over the years on to follow the instructions that are clearly given, repeatedly given, and I think that will get us a long way. If not perfection, they probably have to make adjustments as you go along. But clearly, the Barbados have never had this kind of faced this kind of challenge before. It's not like a hurricane. You know, we can see it and feel it and see the effects. It's something insidious, invisible, unless you get, you know, until you get the symptoms, etc. So I think we have to calm down. Don't listen to what's happening. You know, don't follow avidly what's happening in the other islands around us. That's where we feel that as long as they do it, we therefore should do it too. Otherwise, we are behind the times. Follow our leaders. Follow our experts.
I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that assessment at all. I really believe that you have to listen to both. I mean, not just the islands, but the countries that have had a major problem. And, you know, my concern with Glenn is this. I find that we have this notion of believing that in Barbados, we must find the solution ourselves for every problem, while other people out there are searching for the same solution that we are searching for. Why am I supposed to listen only to people in Barbados? People in Barbados, I'm going to be honest with you. You know, if you are a politician in Barbados, you have your political perspective that you look at. You look at the economy, you look at the fallout, and that's part of that. When I heard the first discussion, I knew that that's where we were. We were looking at what's the fallout as far as our tourism industry was concerned. And we were on the horns of a dilemma. It is that versus what should really be done right now in these circumstances. And in the meantime, you have to look at, let's take how Wuhan dealt with it. You got to look at that and say, well, it is new and they have gone about it in a particular way. We also have the contrast of Italy. Italy locked down early, but still got so many cases.
But David, all I use, I might not say it clear, all I meant to say is not all, presumably, and it seems to be that all the people who are leading the fight, our bureaucracy, the public service, our health center service, are following the sense and in contact with the World Health Organization and what is happening in the rest of the world.
I'm not disamused.
Or ignoring that.
I am not dismissing the notion of listening to what is happening locally, but I will say this to you. If you are sufficiently well informed and you listen to both, you sometimes will take defensive action because you are watching, for instance, how other countries gave advice, appeared to be somewhat measured in the way that they were going after it, and then eventually what they had to do. They had to become drastic. They put, in some instances now, they got troops out on the streets to stop people from mixing. We haven't reached that stage yet, but you know what? Because I am watching that, I am saying to myself, you know what? I am going to stay off the streets. I am going to stay in my home if I can. Because you're watching the trend, I must confess. Forgive me, but
No, I agree. We have started doing that thing long ago.
Right.
So I'm following that.
And what influence?
We cannot have our New Jersey reaction what we hear in the news. Other people are going to say, let us. I believe that all people are following the news, following what's happening in other countries, and being guided by that too. So I presume, I like to assume that they will take the necessary action when it comes by. In the meantime, be aware, be alert, but still be guided by your local, not by newscasts and press conference.
Well, my friend, I want to tell you that yet again, I don't share your view exclusively. No. I feel that we need to listen to all that is happening around us. The disease did not begin here. There are other people who are battling it. They have had to take various steps. We need to listen to see what it is that has worked and what has not worked. And ultimately, I must be responsible for myself.
Of course. But I never met an employee who listened only to Barbados. I saw the news, I saw what was going on, but I still listened. I have to listen to those who are operationally on the ground for me.
Well,
Trump cannot do anything for me from the United States.
But Trump is not the only speaker.
I know, but I'm saying, I just call an example. I cannot follow him because he cannot do anything for me. You know, I have to listen to all that's happened, and at the same time, listen to what's happened on the ground for people who are paid to do it for
me. I got to look at what's happening also in a place like Italy and what's happening in Spain. All right?
But you have to look at the country.
And ultimately, Glenn, everybody taking the advice from the World Health Organization?
But listen to me. The people are not prepared. France and Italy have a different approach, a different cultural approach like anybody else in Europe. And people are not prepared. It's even happened in Miami, where people are not prepared to curtail their normal, their cultural practices, festivals and all. People want to socialize and dance and sing and dine as though it were normal.
But there's some people here who doing time. There's some people here doing that.
But they're crazy. Because they're human behavior. The whole thing is, I remember talking about discipline. You have to curtail your normal inclination, your normal habits. Like me, I never realized you used to touch my face as much until they made me conscious. And then suddenly your face starts to itch, and you have to restrain those touching your face. So then those things, you have to be disciplined, be prepared to curtail your habits. These are not normal times. We are seeing something we've never seen before. I don't think Barbados had a health challenge like this since 1854 with the cholera outbreak.
Right.
Right, but no, we have one. In those days, there was no education, there were poor health standards, etc. In those days, some 20,000 people died. There were mass burials because they didn't have time to get people's names. They just count them and put them in mass graves. So I'm saying we are not there.
Mm.
But at the same time, we still have to be disciplined, restrain yourself. You cannot go partying. They only go when you absolutely have to. Lots of my friends only go, you know, when they absolutely have to, and then they go and they practice the social distancing, the physical separation of self from others in order to make. Let's say this. I feel that I myself am assuming that I have the virus.
That's the recommendation from World Health.
And so therefore, I am going to restrain myself and everything so I don't pass on to my family or my friends. If everybody adopted that defensive approach. I think that would contribute.
Well, I want to suggest to you that an interesting place to be is the supermarket. Now, yesterday, we went to one of the supermarkets and they started to introduce the social distancing in a more significant way. It meant that no more than a certain number, I believe they must have been counting them, there were supposed to be 25.
Yeah.
25 people could be in the supermarket at any one time. And it therefore meant that a number of people were outside in the sun for quite some time. But when we got into the supermarket, there were some messages in there reminding people not to touch up the merchandise,
right.
That they needed to make selections with their eyes before they actually touched the merchandise. And this it reminds us of everyday practices.
Precisely.
That help to spread it. You know, food is absolutely essential.
You have to revise all your assumptions, all your presumptions, things you took for granted no longer up there. This is a brand new era we've entered into, and we do not know what lies down the road. So you have to take it day by day, hour by hour, and like I said, discipline yourself and do the things which you're being told professor you should do.
You see, there's another dimension to this that I put on the table. That's why I say we need to see this as a global village. We need to see this as a global problem, and okay. Barbados is part of that.
Yeah.
We have never had this experience either. And along the way, we will make choices that are good, and we can make some choices that are not so good. With the best will in the world, we are going to seek to exercise options that in our judgment at the official level seem to be correct, but we can also be proven wrong. So that's why I'm saying the ultimate message here is listen to all that is going on around us and try to be as responsible as we possibly can be.
To yourself first.
Yes.
And if you be responsible to yourself, you'll be responsible to others and your country.
Right.
All right.
Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. And I just want to remind people who have to go to various places, whether you're going to a government department and you have to stand up outside, or you're going to a company to do business, and because of the rule that you can't have more than 25 people in a place at a time, you are restricted to being outside in a line. Please bear in mind that you are supposed to practice social distancing in the line. There are too many people in the line who are too close to each other. We need to take this thing far more seriously. And given the fact that we have now discovered quite a number of cases that are basically homegrown, it just tells you you don't know who's been in contact with whom. So, there's another dimension to this that we'll come to shortly. Down to brass tacks. You on the air?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you. I'm just curious because looking at the situation here, I listening to what Venka had just now will pull me off my original point just a little bit. But watching the BBC this morning and looking at the circumstances in the UK, Italy, Spain, these are industrialized nations that I would imagine have much more resources than we do. And my view is, as a citizen here, that I ask myself, when the government indicates to us that they've had consultation between the private sector and the social partnership, as to speak, and we still have a situation now where some of the private sector seems to me to be getting ahead of the government in terms of shutting down and deciding that, look, we need to curtail what was obtained before. And I ask myself, should the government not begin to think, and I don't want to be an alarmist, but should we not start moving in the direction of shutting down? Because I heard the UK government indicated that they are actually 2 weeks behind where Italy is at. So that suggests to me that before we get to a point where we say we should have done X 2 weeks ago, that we should be a little more proactive. And that is my view because I don't want to pull away too much from my point because I find when you're on hold, you get so many ideas coming based on what you're hearing going ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So back to the point that I really reached out. I looked for it online. I did not get the opportunity. Well, the opportunity was there, but opting not to take it could go out yesterday, could buy a newspaper because I am somewhat paranoid. And I think paranoia might be a better approach in some instances, not to let overwhelm you, but paranoia actually could be a good thing at this point, in my view. I refused to go for a newspaper yesterday. I'm curious to know what is the situation, because I'm a service provider. I do business with Sandals. Sandals has taken a position, and in my view, rightfully so. And this morning, I slipped out from home for about 10 minutes just to submit some stuff to account because they said they'll be shutting down, so get whatever you have to get into them. But with that said, I also have financing on the vehicle I use, and I communicated with two of their staff members who now are on 3-day work week this week, and then there'll be no work for them. But they both have Suzuki Swift, which is a car which a lot of working class young men and women tend to have in the market. And I guess they were of the view that they have not heard anything to suggest that there will be any flexibility from their finance company in terms of what is happening in Italy and in other parts of the world where there's a suspension being at 3 months or whatever. Now, obviously, the private sector is set up to make money. I respect the fact that a loan is a financial instrument, and there has to be a lot of consideration and impact that a delay in payments can have on an economy. But at the end of the day, if there's no income, there will be default, and default is still a problem. Being in the middle of a birth program, I don't want to overwhelm you with too much thought right now, but my situation would be the same in some circumstances. Some of these young ladies indicated, well, not some, there were only two, they indicated to me that they don't have any savings outside of their pay to really carry them very far forward. So I just asked myself if the Financial Services Commission, along with the government, had any collaborative discussion with the financial institutions on mortgages, car loans, and such like. It would be nice because, yes, the Prime Minister and her team, they're coming out, they're speaking, but it is good to articulate a point, but sometimes you can articulate a point that really is not impactful enough on the masses. So I will submit because, as I said, I don't want to overwhelm the discussion to you, but these are legitimate concerns. And obviously, a loan like that can be seen as a ledger loan, but the reality is if any comment was made that they don't have any savings that can carry them very far, that suggests to me that food would be an issue. And that's more essential to me than getting in your car and driving from A to B when you shouldn't be driving from A to B somewhere at this point. And I would like to think that if a loan is a contract, so I want to know if there's going to be any flexibility to allow people to use that funding that is not now going to be coming in order to live their lives and, you know, purchase and access the services for more essential needs.
Thank you. You have raised an issue which I think is quite relevant. The Prime Minister did announce during the estimates debate on Friday night that commercial banks would be offering a moratorium of up to 6 months for their customers. And therefore, that takes care of what the commercial banks are putting on the table. However, there are other finance houses in Barbados, and we are yet to hear what they are proposing to do in circumstances where, if you listened yesterday to what the Minister of Tourism had to say, you know, so many flights are now being suspended and so many hotels are being severely impacted by this. The tourism industry is the number one industry in Barbados at the moment. So it will have a cascading effect right through this economy. And therefore, your question on what the finance houses are doing is something that really a mix of government and the private sector need to, you know, share some information with the public on that particular score. Hopefully they're actually assessing the implications of the effect of COVID-19 and are currently meeting to come up with some plan of action. But if the commercial banks have been swayed into doing what they have done, it is the same environment in which the other finance houses are operating.
Thank you, David.
Right.
Because I look at the situation with a little more scope after leaving those ladies. And the reality is that the credit unions, the Signia Globes and the Capitals and all these people, they are not operating under the branding of a commercial bank, but they're selling financial instruments. So
that's
to your
correct.
Point, these are all things that need to be looked at. And at the end of the day, don't get me wrong, I understand and respect the fact that there are businesses that are operating with a profit in mind. But if you're going to argue the point that this has to be a national effort, I just want to know where...
Your point is well taken.
But said, one last thing on...
Before you go on, let me just say to you that it is evident that these finance houses are actually stepping in and taking up some of that ground which people believe is being surrendered by the commercial banks. These finance houses also perceive themselves as creating a new environment for people who want to borrow, and they are projecting themselves as though they are the good guys, the new good guys that you can turn to. So it would be surprising if they did not, in that particular vein, set about to do better than the commercial banks in this regard.
But David, you are operating in a space that you're well aware that, yes, they position themselves to make the case that they are the good guys, the other alternative.
Yes.
But within that, that is great marketing. That positions them to be seen as the fees and everything that come along with the commercial banks that we've been complaining about for the last 2-3 years. They position themselves as, look, we are here to provide you with a service that is not as heavy a load to carry. And now, as you said, there will be a thing to see whether or not that was just rhetoric or whether or not that was actually their new mode of operandi. And we wait to see. But
you have
but
another point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You made the mention of the supermarket that you visited yesterday. And that's one day removed from what you experienced on Saturday, which was the supermarket the bigger chain in the country, they had an operation at the mall, and when you entered, you had to stay 10 feet away from the customer that was at the cash point at the given time, having their stuff checked. But and that created queues all the way back down to your refrigerators. And within that, there are other customers that were using the L while there were people queuing up that couldn't advance more than 10 feet forward that were checking. So to my mind, that really was not necessarily practical because you're still exposing yourself, and you know supermarkets well in Barbados, some are modern, some are age. They all carry relatively small aisle spaces. And to my mind, so that's something that I would need to be looked at, because as you said, your experience with yesterday, mine was one day removed from that. And so 25 people, but you having 10 people to queue up to a cash point.
No, that's stopped. That's being, when you get to the cash register, in some instances, because all hotels, all supermarkets haven't necessarily made that kind of adjustment. But they are also making sure that as you stand up to go to the cashier, that you are 6 feet apart.
Okay. All right, well, David, listen, thanks for your time. You've been fine.
Thank you very much for calling. Just to let you know that Donald Trump has ordered the deployment of National Guard troops in the three states hardest hit by the coronavirus outbreak. Troops will be used in New York, California, and Washington to deliver medical aid and set up medical stations after the number of deaths nationwide rose to 471 and infections to 35,244. There are fears of a shortage of key medical supplies in New York City. New York City, out of the 35,244, I was aware that there was an earlier report that said about half of these 35,000 are in New York City alone. So there is a major problem in that regard. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, morning.
I must commend you. You've made a point that is so clarion and so serious. The guy was talking about an articulated point. Your point was really impactful. You understand what you've just said? You said,
what's that?
You said, whom have been in contact with whom as regarding the homegrown. After you hear this, you don't know who's the next person that you're going to come in contact with, who would have been exposed. So your point is so serious that everybody should see every other person as the likely person that... You understand what I'm saying? The contact aspect of it. You made a real solid call.
Somebody just sent me a picture about a line outside the immigration department. I saw this same thing last week, last week. There's no social distancing being enforced out there. There's a need for them to deal with that.
Yes. The hardest demand right now is about the social contact. But I want to move on to something that was said on the program yesterday. And I mean, it is serious when you look at it. Dr. Lashley was making the point that there are some persons, they're in no social group, they're in no church, they're not technically savvy. You see that stock of persons that he has highlighted? That is a stock that has got to be paid great attention to. Because they ain't going to be arming no information. They're not exposed to any information. They're not really interacting that kind of way. And that chunk of person is can become very vulnerable with all the efforts made, if vigilance is applied between them, if you see what I'm trying to say.
Well, you know, we come back to, you have to take responsibility for whom? For yourself.
For yourself.
This is so our most important message to the public is, this is one time, it is not just about the government this and the government that, and the private sector this and the private sector that. It is about each and every one of us looking at what we are doing and how we are doing it. Because we all must see ourselves as vulnerable. All right?
I agree with you. But the serious thing is now, on to another point that I made sometime last week, and I've been following it up with some passion. Now, one or two, the Prime Minister has alluded to some waiver with the water authority persons and whatever. You know, I spoke to even up to Friday when he was asking for the other utilities to come out. They've got PR persons that can come out and say, look, light and power, the gas, the telephone, their personnel can come out there and say to the, we'll give you all the credit, or do something in respect of the trend that is going in respect to assisting persons in the demonstrate, like, no. And as for today, I haven't heard them as yet. I know the Prime Minister's problem with the water authority, if I let it bank. I want two other persons, Mike. But I want those utilities who have got a chunk of persons, customer, everybody in Ireland is a customer. And they make millions and billions of dollars.
Who's
come
that?
And say something.
Who's that makes billions of dollars? Commercial bank?
I said the commercial bank. Listen to me properly, Mr. Ellis. I said the commercial banks. And the water authority has come out and made some declaration. I'm saying the other utilities like the gas, telephone, light and power, those have got virtually everybody's a customer to them in Barbados. Virtually everybody. Their PR persons can come out, like how they often will come out, and say that they will give credit in regard or some assistance as concerning persons who will be in dire straits now. Because there's some people who live from paycheck to paycheck, pension check to pension check, that would need a couple dollars now to go and stock up.
All right. Well, let me go through the list of things that have come out of the government's package. Workers laid off will have the opportunity to earn unemployment benefit for 6 weeks.
Right.
And will not be required to visit the Warren St. Michael office to facilitate this process. Any employees reduced to a shorter work week will be paid for those unproductive days by the National Insurance Scheme.
Right.
Employers who retain at least 75% of staff will be eligible for employees' contributions to be deferred for 3 months.
Right.
Banks will provide a 6-month moratorium on all loans and mortgage payments. From April 1st, banks will discontinue charging fees to pensionable customers. The Barbados Water Authority is advised to reconnect customers who may have had service terminated recently.
Right.
Landlords urge not to remove tenants who are unable to pay rent. Vendors right. with licenses but not registered as self-employed will be allowed to register so as to receive monthly $600 payments. These
right.
are some of the measures that have been put in place.
Okay. So all I'm trying to add is that I've been calling earlier for the utility companies to make their input relative to the same call and what you've just read out. That's all I'm trying to
okay.
do, short.
All right, sir.
You see?
There are people complaining here about lines outside both government offices and private places. Really, I mean, all that is required here. But first of all, we have to remind each and every person who is going to a government department or to any other establishment in Barbados about why it is so important to stay the distance. That distance is crucial in trying to protect you. And many of you are just ignoring it. And you're just going there. Now, you need, of course, you may need some reinforcement by having a security guard placed outside to remind you. That could help. But for whatever reason, this idea about social distancing has not penetrated the minds and the heads of a lot of people in Barbados. And that is why you have people getting together in some restaurants, some bars, playing dominoes and playing cards in close proximity to each other, all right? Exercising and holding one another. All of this, this is not part of what you should be doing. This is down to brass tacks.